Friends, you're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA. I want to welcome Áine Fey from Limerick, who is president of Concern Worldwide, US. And Áine Fey, you're very welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Adrian. Glad to be here.
You know, many people would know that there is hardly a time when a concern is not called upon to provide help and aid and, in fact, save lives in so many countries. But we welcome you today to the program because there is a new crisis and one we could say that concern hasn't faced before. Maybe you tell us about it.
Indeed, I suppose it's the number of people across large areas of Africa that are really suffering very, very badly from hunger. You know, in South Sudan being one of the countries where, in fact, part of the country has had a famine declared, and the conditions are so poor there. And in Somalia, South Sudan, Yemen and Nigeria are the four countries that are most in the headlines around this. But I think I would also add Kenya and Ethiopia to the mix because they're suffering from severe drought. And some of those countries suffering from Somalia particularly, from their third consecutive drought, a situation that really the poorest farmers in these countries just cannot withstand. You know, they've managed to get through two, but this third one really has left them in dire straits.
You know, we don't have to go too far back in our own history to know that, 170 years ago in Ireland, or is it 160, we had a famine which wiped out almost half the population of Ireland, one from 1847 to 1852. It behooves us, those of us from Ireland, Irish Americans, and those with Irish genes, to know the depth of the severity of famine and what it does and what it can do. Can I go back just a little bit again to almost now 50 years ago when Concern was established in Ireland and indeed by a couple of missionaries, among the founders, Father Angus Finucane from Limerick and his brother Jack. Initially, that was not considered to be an organization which would inherit heading into the future as having a situation of humanitarian aid which would actually get progressively worse. Bring us back to the founding.
I mean, the foundings were rooted really in the Irish missionaries who were in Nigeria in the 60s. And when the war in Biafra, which resulted really in communities being cut off from any supplies of food, and landing them in really the famine-like situations, the missionary priest and Angus and Jack Finucane being two of those appealed to the Irish public. And I think the response for the time was so big for Ireland, and that a shipload of goods, including food and equipment necessary, was sent out to Nigeria. And that really was the beginnings of Concern at the point when the Biafran famine was beginning to abate. Unfortunately, the war in between East and West Pakistan resulted in more than 1 million people being displaced into camps in India. and concern with the support of the Irish public really made a decision that they would assist there. And, you know, you're right. I mean, I don't think any of our founding fathers would have envisaged 50 years later that the needs in our world would be so great.
You know, also we'd have to remember that back in the late 60s in Ireland, Ireland wasn't exactly, there was no Celtic Tiger, there was no Celtic Tiger in sight. Ireland was struggling itself, the economy in Ireland, the immigration, the forced immigration from Ireland was, you know, was at its peak or close to it. It took again a lot of commitment from, you know, from those who again were aware of our own history, and it wasn't that far away from generations that anybody had to really explain the ravages of famine day. Your humanitarian aid, almost 3,000 professionals and volunteers in 29 countries, again reaching about, you know, give or take 7.5 million people. How do those of us who are listening to this program today? That is such a monumental task. If we were looking for, you know, an excuse, we would say that is such a mammoth task that really we're not able to do that much about it. Can you address that aspect of it?
And you know, Edwin, I suppose really, I mean, if you were to think in terms of Ireland and the history of Ireland, and you're right, the sort of moral obligation really based in our own history of famine, you know, and the generosity of the public. And I'll talk about Ireland first and the generosity of the Irish people throughout those years, you know, has been immense. But also, as has the generosity of the American public, and the American government in allowing us the funds to respond to these crises. You know, and you know, it's very easy, and I think for many people sort of saying, oh, I could never do that. I mean, every little helps. You don't actually have to be on the ground to help. The resources that we get from your listeners and from the public, you know, allow our professionals that are overseas to do the best they can with the money that we receive, you know. And in the two countries where we're operational, in terms of the food crisis at the moment, Somalia and South Sudan, I mean, the needs with every passing day, the number of people being displaced by famine, which again brings back the history of Ireland and the number of Irish people that ended up on the shores of America looking for assistance. You know, I mean, these refugees are pouring into countries who do not have those resources to look after them. And I think there's a looming crisis as a result of that for the refugee populations that are landing in Uganda, in Sudan, and in Ethiopia, countries that have their own food crisis. So, you know, my plea to people would be really to consider that, you know, every little helps.
Yeah.
You know, and not to be too daunted by the task that's given to our world, really, today.
Concern, you know, we could say, consists of a global community of humanitarians, partners, community members, supporters, donors, and volunteers.
Yes.
You know, who actually one would imagine that you know, they, in addition to those who donate, the number of volunteers, again, we could give Ireland credit, but you have volunteers from, you know, throughout the world. But America is no slouch either, when even, you know, way beyond the Irish community. America has has done its bit and continues to do so.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, I mean, the fact is that, you know, Concern opened its office here 20 years ago, and the support that we've received over that time has, you know, really validated our decision to open an office here. The generosity that has been given by the people who support us is, you know, it helps us hugely, and
yes,
it's very, very much appreciated.
And we could only make sure that, whereas many of us know the tremendous leadership of Tom Moran, Chairman, CEO, President of Mutual of America, and those who you know, who he brought on board, set the bar fairly high,
very
we might
high.
Say.
Very high, very high, and you know, we have a very, very supportive board of directors. And you know, Tom has stepped down as chair of the board now, but he remains on the board.
Yes.
So his support continues.
Let me ask you about what some of us are aware of, is that America and indeed some other countries do provide food supplies, medical supplies, to some of the most devastated areas in third world countries. But we're also aware that the management of those services are sometimes not just a question of distribution, but also we are in war-torn countries where it's you know, where you have some ruthless leaders, and they don't make it easy, you know, to allow humanitarian organizations, you know, to even do their job and get the supplies and the resources to the most needy. But if we can address that part of it for a moment, I might preface this by saying that of the humanitarian aid agencies, Concern is considered to be exceptional in that area. But can you tell us, Onyefe, president of Concern Worldwide here in the U.S., can you tell us about the emergencies that you constantly come up with? Not only are you going into an area of you know, devastation and famine, but you're also going into uncharted territory where there is wild abuse and it is dangerous, and that's putting it mildly.
Indeed. And I suppose, I mean, the credit, I suppose, first and foremost, really has to go to the workers that we have on the ground, many of them the nationality of those countries that we're working in. And, you know, one of the things with my many years working overseas with Concern, our security management is very good. So we're very clear about what the situation on the ground is and how we can best get assistance to people despite the conditions, you know, so it's trying to look at, I suppose, what you'd call innovative ways of getting assistance through. And I would say to you, in the more recent past, so maybe in the last 5 to 7 years, we're much more into using technology now to get assistance out to people, particularly in countries where the markets are still operational. If we can actually get cash to people, and we're not only helping them provide for their families, but actually we're also keeping the markets alive. And so using mobile cash, you know, so using systems there that ultimately get that through. Now, it doesn't take away from the fact that circumstances on the ground from time to time prevent us from getting to people in dangerous areas. You know, in areas of South Sudan and Somalia at the moment, you know, that are incredibly difficult to get to. And the thing to do really is you've got to negotiate. You've got to negotiate with the government. You've got to talk to warring partners, parties, to ensure that they understand that, you know, that we're not taking a political stand in their conflict. But what we're there to do is help people who desperately need it.
Isn't that part of your overall success and your acceptance in countries like that, that you are non-political, non-Indian, even though, going back to, again, the foundation of Concern Worldwide, it was founded by Irish missionaries at a time when many of us in Ireland were of the opinion that when the ministers, when the priests and when the nuns left to go to Africa, to go into places like that, that surely to God their first and priority would be, you know, to bring the gospel and to bring religion of some kind into an area. We did not realize back in that period that actually the goal of Concern hasn't changed that much either. A lot of those missionaries who went had to address poverty.
Yep.
And again, that is primary. So it's got to be much more acceptable, again, non-political, non-sectarian, you know. That has to ring a bell, and it's also helpful if we understand that.
Yes, yes, and I think really, and our reputation in many ways stands on that, you know, is that making that very clear to the people that we work with and the partners we work with. That, you know, we're not working on the basis of any of those preferences on religious grounds or ethnic grounds, you know, but that it is really our mission is to help those most in need.
We had, in our own history, we had, when we were fleeing famine, in Ireland, there was a place to go. There were a couple of places that we might have gone to. But if you take some 600,000 people today who have been displaced for their homes, they don't have the option to get on a boat and go anywhere. They really... they have to leave their homes and their villages, and their primary concern is for food and even water.
Food, water, and safety.
You know.
And I think that, you know, I mean, I think the other thing that people should keep in mind as well, and I'm sure this was very true of our ancestors as well, Adrian, is that most refugees want to go home.
Mm-hmm.
And circumstances allow for it. You know, so this myth that we have that people are, you know, flooding our shores in Europe or whatever to come in and stay, the vast majority of them don't want to stay. The vast majority of them want to go back to their homes and settle back into the life they had. You know, so it is to try really in many ways for us to keep that in mind and to provide assistance. And I suppose one of the things that we're looking at constantly now is how can we provide assistance as close to people's homes as we can possibly get?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that they're not feeling that they have to travel long distances in order to get food and water. Can we get to them before the need for them to leave becomes urgent?
I think it might be good and to hear from you also that this is not kind of a once-off. This is not a drop of food supplies of cash, and then Concern moves on and to yet another area of immediate crisis. You do more, and you've actually, when the cameras are no longer there, and when the ravages of famine and hunger, oppression, when the cameras move on, concern doesn't.
And that really is the thing, is, I mean, we constantly say this, we stay. And we really do our very best to bring people back to at least where they were before the crisis, but really to try and bring them back to a better situation. You know, because it's not enough. It's really not enough just to help them to survive.
And how do you actually do that?
Well, you know, when we're talking to our donors and when we get the individual donations from people, we put it into also looking at... So an example of this would be South Sudan at the moment. In providing food and shelter and water, we're also trying to provide seeds and tools so that people can start to farm again. So that when hopefully the next harvest comes and hopefully when the drought passes, they will actually have hope of putting food on the table. So looking at also training options for people, you know, sort of looking particularly at the youth, is can you provide them with the means for them to earn an income where they're settling for now, so that, again, that they have the resources to get back to where they've come from. And education would be the other one, Adrian, that we look at very much, you know. Children are often uprooted, you know, and they can lose years of schooling. And they never catch up. So also looking at trying to provide education where people are ending up displaced to see if when they get back that they have a continuing education rather than trying to catch up on 2 or 3 years that they've lost.
The spread of disease and the attempt to control you know, that, or at least to contain it. How would you rate that? And can you put some kind of numbers on it? So,
yeah. I mean, the real dangers, and I suppose at the moment, and again, I've only recently come back from Somalia and South Sudan, and in both of those countries, diarrhea, in some cases it was already declared as cholera, is a huge problem. Very, very simple to treat if you can catch it in time. Mm-hmm. But it's primarily driven by really the lack of facilities, the lack of water, the overcrowded conditions that people often end up in, so the spread of that disease.
Yeah.
Measles would be something similar in children. You know what it's like. One child gets it and every child in the area has it. And how do you keep up with the vaccination campaign to assist that? But I think really the two things that I would say in trying to prevent that disease is to ensure at least the minimum quantity of water that people have, both for drinking and for hygiene, and also having medical facilities available.
Right.
So I would say even where you can't provide them yourself, that you provide support either to the government and to increase their health care for populations arriving.
Yeah, one can, I think, understands that if you have rampant malnutrition and dehydration, that without addressing those and without having some degree of inoculations of medical help, you know, there's worse to come.
Yes. Yes.
Again, more than 350,000 children under the age of 5 being acutely malnourished. Is that something, again, you have mentioned that when the rains come and when the drought passes, things will improve. But actually, that's not in the cards right now, is it?
No, it's not. And one of our largest programs really in these areas would be the treatment of malnutrition in children under 5. Again, it's this access to, when children are malnourished, they get sick very easily. And quite often it's the sickness associated with it that leads to death. So really the important thing is to get food and then medicine into these children.
Yes.
And then we do a lot of work in terms of where we can provide seeds and tools where people do have a piece of land, is really ensuring that they're planting mm-hmm. the right nutritious crops to feed those families, to feed those children.
You also, of course, going along with that, you have to provide shelter and basic household items to people living in these displacement camps. And that's got to be, when you multiply that by an ever-growing number of people who are in not only dire distress, but are on the brink of dying from disease and malnutrition. I think it's mammoth, but it brings us back to what can we do and to what do you need from us and where do we go from here?
Yeah, and I suppose it's really just to say, Adrian, I mean, any support, in terms of donations to us, however small, are very welcome. And I would like to your listeners to say, will be well used.
Yes.
It's those resources that we get from individuals that allow us to make those choices quickly.
Yes.
That we're not waiting for governments of various countries who themselves are very generous,
yes.
but have much more, it's a much slower process.
Mm-hmm.
You don't get that money overnight.
And also, I think many of us, particularly in the United States, are aware that corporations whose generosity is well known, that indeed employees, those who have knowledge and awareness that some corporate funds are being distributed anyway. And that is an area that, we can help with to get concern on the list,
absolutely.
So to speak.
Absolutely. And just to say to people, we do have a very good reputation and, I stand by that reputation of how well we use the money and how much of every dollar actually goes to the work on the ground.
Right. And indeed, when with the, in terms of ratings for charitable and humanitarian organizations concerned, is, but always has been, ranked among the top evaluations there, so that's also got to be of help. Can I ask you about yourself? And as somebody who has spent a bulk of lifetime in different areas of concern, how did you move with concern, and do you know from one year to the next where you're going to be, and what kind of a light is that?
Mm-hmm. But I suppose if I take the last bit first, I mean, for me, a very privileged one. I have truly had a wondrous career with concern. I've enjoyed it. It perhaps helps that I'm single. And as you know, I'm not uprooting family every time I move on. So I wandered into it, Adrian, and perhaps with you coming from Ireland, you'll understand we were brought
yes.
up in Catholic Ireland, where we heard always from missionaries.
Mm-hmm.
And so I always had this desire to do what I thought being 2 years,
yes.
2 years to a cause. And that was my firm intent when I joined Concern 35 years ago. you get drawn into it, and you get drawn into
yeah.
the privilege of working in different cultures with different people, and the realization, I suppose over the years, the realization that the men, women that I meet in the course of my work want nothing greater for their families than my parents wanted for us. It's the same ambition at the end of the day, a better life, to provide for them as well as they can. You know, and there but for the grace of God go any of us for the circumstances into which we've been born. You know, countries that are beset by drought, that are beset by wars, you know, that individuals have very little control over. And, you know, so from that point of view, I have to say it's been a huge privilege to be part of the Concerned family over those years.
There's little more to say, but again, having 3,000 people like yourself who are committed and who, you know, I don't know how you react to, you know, the description that this is a vocation. I mean, you can't, for those who want to serve for a year or two like you set out to do and are still working and devoting a lifetime to this, it's got to be a vocation.
Well, maybe, but as I said, I think I get much more out of it than I would ever hope to get.
Anya, I wanted to say at this point, your website, Concern Worldwide US, it's fabulous. And for anybody who would log on to that, I think it would answer more questions than we've been able to cover during this interview. But it is. It spells it out. And it's a great website.
Thank you.
You're located, actually, you have two headquarters in the United States. One being right here in New York City. 355 Lexington Avenue. Telephone number is 212-557-8000. But you also have a similar headquarters in Chicago.
That's right. Yes, a smaller office, but yes, we're based in Chicago also.
The website, by the way, is concernusa.org. And friends, I do want to recommend the website again. All right, it's www.concernusa.org. And my guest again, friends, Anya Fay, who is president of Concern Worldwide U.S. Thank you for spending the time with us, and I know that we have you know, many concerns of our own in the United States and from, you know, from a great number of people who think that we're not in great shape ourselves. I think if we look towards the work that Concern is doing, maybe we're doing better than we think. Main thing is that we can to some degree help. And I thank you for that. In New York, it's 212-557-8000. And you even have a toll-free number, 1-800-CONCERN. Again, Anya Fay, thank you for spending the time with us. And friends, you are listening to Irish Radio Network, USA.
Thank you, Adrian.